fuel efficient can cars be?
Without angering the people who make them.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Adrienne Hill, in for Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for checking out the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Tuesday, July 5th, 2011.
Coming up on the podcast, Wall Street's concern over the debt ceiling debate.
Rare earth minerals may not be so, well, rare.
And later, you've heard of the flight of the Concords? How about the plight of the ostriches?
Yes, they have a plight, especially in New York. That's ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Negotiations between the Obama administration and U.S. carmakers are now heating up again over new miles per gallon standards.
The White House is reportedly pushing to almost double the standards in the next 14 years, much higher than the standards asked for when carmakers GM and Chrysler were on government life support a few years ago.
Yeah, we remember that. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is with us with the latest on that story. Good morning, Mitchell.
Hi, Steve.
So what's the debate about now?
Well, the administration is pushing for U.S.-made cars and trucks to hit 56 miles a gallon on average by 2025. Environmentalists say go higher, 60 miles per gallon. It would save us all thousands filling up our cars and cut oil imports and cut greenhouse gases. Now, the auto industry, interestingly enough, doesn't say that hitting these higher fuel efficiency goals is technologically impossible. They just say it's really expensive, maybe pushing up the price by $10,000 per vehicle.
All right. So the technology is there, or at least on the drawing board. Why not just make this happen now?
Well, the reason may be us, U.S. consumers. Will we buy electric cars that have to be charged every few hundred miles or tiny little hybrids? Paul Eisenstein is at auto website thedetroitbureau.com.
Hybrids simply are not gaining market demand. If you were to remove the Toyota Prius, the amount of hybrids that are being sold, they're almost insignificant. They're little more than an asterisk on the sales charts.
And in fact, Eisenstein says Americans are buying big pickups again in bigger numbers, even with higher gas prices that we've been seeing. We just seem to really like our big cars and trucks.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reporting live for us. Mitchell, thanks.
You're welcome.
In Washington today, lawmakers are back at it, trying to work out a compromise that would allow the government to raise the debt ceiling. How nervous are investors? For more, we go to Julie Neiman, an analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. She joins us every Tuesday. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Adrienne.
So the markets had a great week last week, the best in 2 years. Why aren't investors reacting to the chance the U.S. could default?
Oh, the market says this is really all theater. Although we do have some congressmen who seem to love apocalyptic outcomes, we have rising corporate profits, though, restructuring Greek debt, call it anything but default. The market really sees only draconian alternatives if you don't raise the debt ceiling. And there are alternatives out there. Ron Paul plan. The Fed cancels all of the treasuries they bought with quantitative easing. They own it anyway. Why pay themselves? That would save a $1.5 trillion. The McCain plan. You've got a mini debt ceiling. Move the deficit to debate to 2012 campaign. That's the season for some real fun then. And then the president can always invoke the 14th Amendment, which relies on the validity of the public debt.
So investors aren't that worried now. How will we know if that changes? What specific things can we look for?
Well, if it does happen, then it's Katie bar the door, because you will have financial hysteria. The financials, meaning the banks, the insurance companies, brokerage firms, you'll see those prices plunge. In fact, that's the only reason they rose this week, because of the confidence. Treasury prices will plunge as interest rates skyrocket. And then credit default swaps, which are insurance policies on debt instruments, would plunge. Trading out there are so many of them, the ability to settle up is not there. Now, that's going to be a real financial collapse. So the unthinkable, if it happens, that's what it would be.
Great. Julie Neiman is an analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Thanks, Julie.
You bet.
Melting mountain snow means there are some complications in cleaning up that oil spill in Montana's Yellowstone River. Officials say with the rising waters, it could get even more difficult to reach areas damaged by the crude spilled from the Exxon pipeline. Dwayne Winslow is Emergency and General Services Director for Yellowstone County, Montana. He's set to tour the area with the governor of that state later today. He's with us now, though. Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning.
Now, Exxon officials were downplaying the scale of the spill, but we're starting to get an idea of just how much damage we're looking at. What are you seeing?
Well, we're seeing a fair amount of damage along the Yellowstone River. Yellowstone River is at near flood stage, so it's very fast, and anything on the river moves pretty quickly. So it got downstream a little quicker, I think, than a lot of people thought. But Exxon is certainly ramping up their efforts to try and take care of the situation.
How much do people rely on the river for their daily lives and for businesses?
It's used recreationally quite a bit, boating, camping, and tourism is our second largest economy in Montana, so that is very important. Also, Billings and cities downstream do take their drinking water from the Yellowstone River as well, so a lot of precautions are being taken to make sure that that water stays clean.
It stays clean. In the cleanup phase right now, where are we?
Well, they have about 200 people with kind of boots on the ground that are literally, because the river is so high and so fast, they're not able to put boats out on the river. So they're actually walking along the shoreline, finding all the areas where the oil has come ashore, and doing their cleanup literally step by step.
Dwayne Winslow, Emergency and General Services Director in Yellowstone County, Montana. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Factory orders were up slightly in May, 0.8%. A big piece of that was aircraft manufacturing. That's from a government report this morning. Also today, General Motors says it sold nearly 200,000 cars in China in June, up 10% over a year ago.
You can check out more numbers, stocks, and others inside our website, marketplace.org. And you can follow us on Twitter as well. The program is at Marketplace Radio. My Twitter address is at Radio Chio.
And I'm at Adrian Hill. That's Adrian with one N.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
And now to the Marketplace Global Perspective. United and American Airlines launch a key lawsuit in Europe today.
The carriers are unhappy with a European plan to curb the airline industry's carbon emissions. The legal challenge is especially critical because Europe's carbon plan is the first that covers airlines. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
The plan comes into force next year. Every airline using an EU airport will be affected. They'll be given a limit on the amount of carbon they're allowed to emit. Exceed those limits and the carriers will have to buy so-called carbon permits. We're not talking here about limits on carbon emitted in European airspace only. It's the whole flight that will be taken into account. Aviation lawyer Mark Bissett says the American carriers claim this clearly oversteps European jurisdiction.
If you take, for example, a flight from Dallas to London, a very small part of that will involve emissions over EU airspace. So the US is saying, well, why should we pay for emissions over US sovereign territory? Why should we pay for emissions over international waters?
The EU says the carbon emission plan will encourage carriers to buy more fuel-efficient planes, but the carriers are fretting about the cost of the plan, an estimated $1.6 billion a year. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
It's the height of the tourism season in China. There are some estimates the country's new middle class will make more than 2 billion domestic trips this year. So how will all those tourists affect China's national parks? Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
This is how the Chinese travel. In groups, by bus. They go to places like Jiujiai Valley. This national park in western China is known as China's Yellowstone. It's got snowy mountains, pristine turquoise-colored lakes, and now lots of people. Tens of thousands of people a day. 15 years ago, this was a Tibetan area deep in the mountains. It was a couple of days' drive from the nearest big city. Now there's an airport, 5-star hotels, and a train line will soon carry more tourists from the rest of China. Xu Ronglin helps manage the park.
We used to let tour buses into the park, and they were a nuisance. They were loud, people threw garbage out of the windows, and the air became dirty from their exhaust.
Xu and his staff saw the writing on the wall. Each year would bring more urban Chinese who had little regard for the environment. The solution? Xu knew most Chinese tourists prefer to sightsee by tour bus and aren't keen on hiking. So his crew banned traffic from the park, limiting tourists to cleaner buses fueled by natural gas. When they get off the bus, tourists are corralled onto boardwalks that limit them to the most photogenic parts of the park. That's a smart move, according to Travis Klingberg, a PhD student at the University of Colorado who specializes in Chinese tourism.
And so by concentrating the development onto roads and boardwalks and minimizing where the crowds of people go, in a way has saved the rest of the park from being trampled.
And that's the way many tourists here prefer it. Zhang Jiawei, a tourist from the city of Xi'an, says he likes the fact that Zhoujiai Valley is crowded with tourists. He says it's no fun traveling alone. No worries there. Domestic tourism is expected to increase 50% in the next 4 years, generating revenue equal to 10% of China's GDP. In Zhoujiai Valley, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Well, some homeowners, Adrian, in Miami, say they're kind of tired of tourists anchoring their boats right off the waterfront property that they own.
This can't go well.
No, it's not going to go. It's not going well at all. Property taxes there, by the way, average about $100,000 a year for these multi-million-dollar estates in Miami. This is just off of Biscayne Bay. Yet the boaters, which enjoy the same sunset views there, sit right offshore for free. So these guys, these people who own the homes, pay $100,000 or more in property taxes. But they're saying, look, you know, these boaters are coming. They're anchoring right outside our backyard on the waterfront, and they're seeing the same stuff that we're seeing, but we have to pay for it. So there are no laws against this, by the way. So some of the homeowners have taken their own hardcore measures. Listen to what they're
cringing.
Doing. Some of them have even taken to shining floodlights all night long on the boats to keep them awake all night and playing loud hip-hop music during the day to get them out of there. One of the boaters, though, is undeterred. He told the Miami Herald, homeowners who don't want to share the water should move to the desert.
Maybe he's a fan of hip-hop, too.
Maybe so.
Really
maybe
loud
so.
Hip-hop.
Maybe he likes it. Yeah, you never know. President of the electronics firm Sharp is looking to move more solar panel production out of Japan. He told the Wall Street Journal it's planning to follow demand.
Here in the U.S., the future of that demand is up in the air. Some federal incentives for renewable energy are set to expire by December. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro reports.
At the Solar Energy Industries Association, Roan Resch says the U.S. gets 20 times more electricity from the sun than it did 5 years ago, and the market's set to double again this year.
Adding somewhere around 33,000 new jobs.
Growth took off 2 years ago when the feds changed a 30% tax incentive to a cash grant and guaranteed loans for large solar projects. Both those measures expire this year, attractive cuts for a tight budget. Resch says that scares investors. David Victor at the University of California, San Diego, says solar companies are stuck between storylines.
On the one hand, they're trying to argue that they're growing really rapidly, and a sign that the industry is viable. On the other hand, if the subsidies were removed completely, the industry would collapse. It's a tiny fraction of the energy system.
Some solar subsidies are set to continue, but long term, the U.S. solar market remains partly cloudy. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Rare earth metals are used to make all sorts of electronics, and they've been, as their name suggests, tough to come by. But now Japanese researchers mining the depths of the Pacific Ocean say they've discovered vast deposits of the key materials. At present, China produces 97% of the world's rare earth metals. From Sydney, the BBC's Phil Mercer reports that China's near monopoly might change.
Rare earths are the essential ingredients that make laptops and TVs smaller, faster, and more efficient. So many of these devices are being produced. Demand for these rare minerals currently outstrips supply. Until now, that's been good for China, because it's been able to capitalize on its dominance as the world's major supplier of earth metals. Carl Spandler, a geologist at Australia's James Cook University, says the discovery near Hawaii is a big deal.
At the moment, most of our rare earths come from the land. This deposit is very significant in that it indicates that they're much more widespread.
However, extracting these new discoveries from deep water in the Pacific won't be easy or cheap. Then there's the question of ownership. Just because the Japanese scientists found these rich deposits in international waters, it doesn't mean they own them. And it's already been reported that Australia, Japan and Tahiti are also interested. In Sydney, I'm the BBC's Phil Mercer for Marketplace.
These rare earth minerals are essential for cell phones, believe it or not, and while they may be more common, another feature of smartphones is disappearing. Unlimited data will soon be a thing of the past for new Verizon customers.
On Thursday, Verizon will unveil capped data plans. So if you like to watch hours and hours of cat videos on your phone, you may have to pay up. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
iPhone and Android users with their apps and YouTube addictions are gorging themselves on mobile data. Don Kellogg tracks mobile trends for Nielsen.
What we've seen in the past is that this has been doubling about every year.
And as more people get smartphones, it's only getting worse. Carriers like Verizon and AT&T spend billions each year trying to keep their mobile networks up to speed. Now they're asking big data users to help pick up the tab. Initially, only a small group of the heaviest users will have to pay more. Scott Schwartzhoff is a VP at AppCelerator, an app publishing platform. He says that won't last long.
You're going to just have an ever-increasing usage out there of data.
Schwartzhoff says it's only a matter of time before we all are watching our data the way we watch our minutes now. I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Well, here in California, the 405 freeway, even just saying it gives me the chills, dissects the western side of Los Angeles. It is a massive, laborious, heart-pounding, white-knuckling stretch of concrete that barely moves most times.
Have you been on the 405? Sometimes it makes me cry.
It is. It makes me cry, too. Traffic is, at most times, a nightmare there.
And that's why, in a couple of weeks, a stretch of the 405 freeway will close down for construction to widen part of the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports, some businesses are taking advantage of the massive roadblock.
LA's 405 freeway is legendary. Who doesn't remember this?
The white Bronco that you see on the freeway going right on your screen contains O.J. Simpson.
And no movie about LA is complete without a monster traffic jam.
And we're just getting word that the 405 southbound has been shut down completely.
But traffic on July 16th will be no fantasy. A 10-mile stretch of the freeway will be closed as part of a billion-dollar construction project to widen the road. And backups all over the city will be epic.
Well, they're calling this Carmageddon.
That's L.A. County Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky. At a press conference, L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa put it this way.
It will be an absolute nightmare.
It's impossible to predict what the shutdown will cost businesses, but tourists typically spend about $70 million over a weekend. Nancy Sadu is chief economist at the L.A. County Economic Development Corporation.
Many people who schedule visits to Los Angeles did so 6 months ago. And so they're now hearing about this and saying, ah!
Some local businesses are capitalizing on that panic. Anastasia Roark and friends started the website Carmageddon.com, which lists places to get deals during the shutdown.
Because a lot of businesses were afraid about a lack of business or a lack of traffic of people hunkering down.
Tattoo parlors and restaurants are offering 405 specials. Bars are offering drinks like the Gridlock and the Road Rager. For the rich, there are discount helicopter rides high above the freeway. Roark says there's another option.
We're encouraging people to get out, walk around, and check out your own neighborhood.
Walk. A walk in L.A.
That was Steve Martin in L.A. Story. Angelenos may want to reconsider the whole walking thing. Construction will shut down the freeway again in about a year. In Los Angeles, I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, ostriches in New York are unhappy.
Oh.
Yeah, you heard me right.
Oh.
Localvores in New York like to eat ostrich meat and the bird's gigantic eggs.
Yeah.
But according to the Wall Street Journal, lady ostriches have gone on strike.
What?
No more eggs. Apparently, there's just not been enough sunshine around New York City to keep the birds happy.
Wow.
This is a problem if you sell ostrich eggs,
yeah,
as you
I'm
might
sure
imagine.
It is. Yeah.
Apparently, the delay in egg laying has cost one farmer $150,000.
Wow.
Super giant ostrich omelet, anyone?
Ooh, that sounds good.
It does.
No, it does.
It sounds good to me.
I guess so. Those eggs are big.
In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill.
Nice to have you working today with us, Adrienne.
A pleasure.
Steve Chiatakis. Enjoy your Tuesday. Thanks for joining us on the Marketplace Midday Update.
And And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.